Verdugo back to the pen. He caught it. He took it back.
He's doing everything right now.
That ball is gone. What a bullet by Devers.
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Welcome to another edition of the TC and Company podcast. Tom Caron with you here. A special week for all of us at Nesson with the Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon going. And obviously, as the baseball continues and the Red Sox try to earn a spot in the postseason, it's going to be a tooth-nail battle down the stretch. But we'll get to the playoff race and all of that down the road. This week is about more than that. This week is about the great work being done by the Jimmy Fund and by all of you who donate over the course of the telethon. And with me is a very special guest. It's Friends and Family Week, Tim. So you're not my family.
Perfect.
So you're friends.
Good.
Whether you want to be or not.
No.
You're stuck. You're like, that's
you're
the Nesson family. You know, it's like Right. Every time you try to get out, we pull you back in. There's no getting out of this now. But you're the perfect guy this week because I think, you know, you're a guy who seemed to get it right away. And I want to get back to the origins of that. You've done
Right. So
much work. We all know of you as the Roberto Clemente Award winner and the chairman of the Jimmy Fund. Red Sox Foundation, the honorary captain of the Red Sox Foundation. Everything you do with all the charity is kind of well known now by all Red Sox fans. But I want to get back to the beginning of it because you weren't from here.
No.
You're a Florida guy who'd been in Pittsburgh and you know, fighting for your major league career early on. You get here in 95 and it's, you know, you take off on the mound, but you also right away, you had already started the Wakefield Warriors. That predated us. You had that commitment to the Children's Hospital down in Florida, but you immediately understood the Jimmy Fund was important here and incorporated that. Do you remember why or how or when it all began for you?
Well, as soon as I got here, I knew the relationship between the Red Sox and the Jimmy Fund. I mean, it was all over the Green Monster. It was all over media, radio, all that stuff. And you know, Roger Clemens was a big part of that. And I heard stories about Roger being involved with the Jimmy Fund. And I just threw myself in there because coming from my hometown in Melbourne, I got involved with an early intervention center. I held my old golf tournament. When I got to Pittsburgh, I got involved with the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And I always felt, you know, and this is probably, it goes back, you know, when I was younger with my parents, is like always being involved with helping others that are less fortunate. And I just carried that on till I got to Boston and realized that, you know, the relationship with the Jimmy Fund and the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and all that good stuff, and just fell in love with it and just been involved with it ever since. And the first year they had the telethon was
the 19th annual. So
yeah.
You know, if you pull back 20, you're in 2001. 2002
yeah.
Maybe was the first
I think
one?
So, yeah. That was
I think 2002.
It was a big deal, you yeah. know, when they started the maturation of the event and what it was going to enthrall. And I was pleased to be a part of that. You know, as a player, when you're asked to go down, I think it was done in the old EEI booth down there in center field,
yep.
and going down there and meeting some of the kids. And I had already met some of them through Lisa Sherber and their trips, their spring training trips to Florida. Getting to meet a lot of the kids and families, and just being able to share my experience on the baseball field and make them feel at home.
Take me back to the Franciscan Children's Hospital,
correct
down in Florida?
And no, the Franciscan is
here
in Boston.
What was the hospital for? Space Coast?
Space Coast Early Intervention Center.
Space Coast Early
Intervention Center. It was a non-for-profit preschool for kids with Down syndrome and other developmental delays. That
what was your early? You made a promise
yeah,
to
I
help
did.
Them out. Take us through that story again.
I did. Well, an old family friend of ours, Betsy Farmer, had a son that was had Down syndrome, and they used to have fundraisers. They used to run the concession stand at softball tournaments, and my dad was playing softball still at the time, so I would volunteer and just sell things or umpire or do whatever I could to try to help them raise a lot of money. And then she started a school with her son and two other families that had kids the same. And I got involved with that, and that was in the minor leagues at the time. And I made a promise that, hey, listen, if I ever get to the big leagues, I want to hold a golf tournament for you and raise as much money as I can. And that year, 92, I made it to the big leagues. I got called up in July, at the end of July, and I made the phone call down to Betsy, and I said, hey, start getting things together. I want to hold a celebrity golf tournament in Melbourne. And unbeknownst to me, they were down to the last $20 in the checking account. They were going to shut the doors. And we had our first year. I think we raised $30,000 or $40,000 in the first year. And it kept the doors open for another year. And then it just got bigger and bigger. until our 25th year a couple of years ago, and they're self-sustainable now. I've gone through other executive directors, and they now have a preschool, a kindergarten through second grade now, as well as the early intervention program as well. But they're growing and growing.
I love that because, you and I both get involved in a lot of charities, and I think it's easy to say yes to things when you have the time and resources to help. But, you know, you in those early days, I would imagine, like, you see the very real results of a place like that, right? Literally saving lives, keeping families together, all of that. But you kept the doors open. Like, that's, to me, you know, a year later, you're looking back, and they're still doing this because of a golf tournament. It's a golf tournament.
It's a golf
tournament.
You know
what I mean? You didn't go dig ditches for an hour. You didn't, but you put in the work. You lean on friends. We all know.
If you've been
in those positions, you're pulling in every favor you can pull to get as much money as you can. But I got to think that kind of shaped the way you looked at those commitments going forward in your career, right? Because that it doesn't get more basic than that. You kept something on its feet that was having a tangible impact on families.
Yeah, absolutely. And the biggest thing for me, and I had done other golf tournaments here and there, and you know why you're there, but you don't really see why you're there. So I would invite all my celebrities in a day early, take them to the school, set them down in the classrooms, and they all had pictures of their team captain was one of the kids in the school or two of the kids in the school. So they knew why they were there, and it really touched their hearts. And it's the same thing with the Jimmy Fund, right? Once you make a visit to Dana-Farber and the Jimmy Fund and walk around the hospital and visit the kids in the rooms, you know why it's so important to be involved with the Jimmy Fund and the Radio Telethon and the amount of money and all the stuff they do, not only for the patients themselves, but for the families as well.
When, do you remember your first visit to the Jimmy Fund?
It was in 95, the first year I got here. I went down there with, can't remember who was involved with the community relations at that time, but I wanted to go see it. And I asked, I can't remember the person's name that took me down there, but you know.
But so you asked, you initiated
asked,
it.
Yeah, because I knew the relationship, and I was like, I want to be a bigger part of this. How can I get involved? And it might have been Kevin Shea, who was our community relations director, that got me in contact with somebody down at the Jimmy Fund. And then I met Lisa Sherber down there. I think that was my first contact person at Dana-Farber, and we've been friends ever since.
Yeah, once you help her once, and you know, some people, I say, you in some of these things, you help them and they'll make sure you always help. Yeah, they'll come back. She doesn't have to make
she
sure
have to
once
me.
You meet her, then you'll do anything you can for her and what she does.
Absolutely. And she's been a big part of my life, my family's life, because my daughter now wants to be a pediatric oncologist. That's because awesome. Of the Jimmy Fund, you know, and it's something that I never thought would happen. And just having her involved, going to the Jimmy Fund and during the Christmas time or something, give them gift certificates or, gift cards or stuffed animals or something. We wanted to, you know, make sure that my kids knew that there's more things and more important to life than just, you know, having your own toys. You know?
Yeah, I appreciate your privilege.
No doubt
about that. It's funny. I got lymphoma there in 2015, and luckily it was a quick, you know, it was, they removed the mass and I never had that treatment. So I don't even like to talk about it because you talk about, you know, cancer patients who go through it. Technically, I was a cancer patient. The only scary thing, I always say, I looked into the abyss because I got that, I learned what it was like to walk into the Jimmy Fund with Dana-Farber. And for the first time, you know, knowing that here we go, I'm beginning a battle with cancer. And you get your full body scans and you sweat out waiting till the results come in because you're waiting to see if it's spread. I was fortunate enough to get it so early, it never spread, no treatment, anything. But we laugh at my house still because I told Lisa Sherber before I told my wife that I had cancer. Because I was like, the first thing I'm doing is getting my name in the Dana-Farber. You know, I need her to connect me with the right people.
Right.
And you know how it is. You're like, I'm going to do this right now. You know, and I was like, I should probably call my wife tell her what the diagnosis was. But she understands because Lisa is a special person.
She's a special person, yes.
And what we get to show everybody about her and her program over these 2 days doesn't do it justice. I mean, we can do it all day.
Oh, absolutely.
But
not.
It still doesn't do justice.
It
to
absolutely
what she
does not. Yeah, she is obviously head of family services for the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and the Jimmy Fund. And what she does and bringing the kids to Fort Myers every single, obviously last year because of COVID and this year couldn't do it, but she aligns all these trips and gets them on the planes, and JetBlue has been great as far as, getting them down to Fort Myers. Or I remember when I was still playing, they had a trip to Chicago and all,
yeah,
the, all the kids.
Was Baltimore the first was one. And I remember I was the sideline reporter. You were obviously still pitching.
Atlanta was
02.
One too. Yeah.
Yep. And Todd Schwartz, I want to say, was the young man who's
You're
no
right.
longer with us. But it was his dream to, because, you know, they were doing events, but but he said, you got to take us on a road trip and let get all the teenagers who are dealing with this.
Yeah.
Let them all be teenagers on, you know, not a teenager with cancer. Right,
correct.
Just another
teenager.
Because to the other kids going through it, you're just another kid, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, to me, that is the most amazing trip. And the Fort Myers one, like you said, is amazing.
It's amazing.
They spend a day in the pool, they spend a day playing, and they spend a day, they finish up at the Red Sox game. And I remember some of those days, I'm sure you've seen it, where you talk to Lisa and the nurses that, because it's an army of nurses, right? There's seven, eight, nine nurses with this group of kids. And four of them tell you they've been up all night at the local hospital because one kid was battling something but didn't want to miss the day at the ballpark.
Correct.
So they get them there. It's amazing.
It's amazing. And I actually got a chance to – I was actually staying at a hotel that they were staying at with the big water slide and the pool. And my family had come over that week, and so we just decided to stay at the hotel as a family. And we run into Lisa and all the kids there. And it was so much fun to get in the pool and splash around with the teenagers that day and then see them at the park the next day.
It you started well in 2010, if I recall, that was the first year they named an honorary captain, and it was you and Clay Buchholz.
Correct.
Were together, right?
Correct.
Do you remember that whole concept like that? Because that was really, to me, so that's 10 years ago, right?
Might have been
years ago.
2009. I think I was it for 2 years, and then I maybe
10, 11.
Maybe it was 10, 11. Maybe
in
for
there
2 years,
anyway,
yeah, somewhere.
But I just remember that whole concept. That was so. Now that's 10 years into what is now a 20-year or 19-year telethon.
Right.
That was sort of where it took the next level, where you actually had a guy say, you know, you were doing promotions with us leading up to the event. You made sure all the guys. I think that might have been the first year the entire team walked down
To center field.
To center field, which was really cool and powerful.
Yeah, I mean, to see the look on the kids' face when all the Red Sox players and coaching staff and everybody involved with the day-to-day operations with the Boston Red Sox were down there, and you could just see the eyes on the kids get really big because some of their favorite players are walking around and getting on WEI and talking and doing an interview like we're doing right now and talking with some of the patients and ones that I've met and formed relationships with and continue to talk to. It truly is a special event.
No
the amount of money
that
they raise is incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, it's incredible.
No doubt about that. And you know, that's the thing, too, is over the years now, and I've been involved in it. The first year, Nesson didn't do it. First year was WEI.
Mm-hmm.
And the second year, Nesson jumped in. So this is our 18th, and I've been part of it for the 18 years that we've done it. And you know, as I'm sure you have, you meet kids and families. Some of the kids aren't with us anymore.
Correct.
And the families still are. And it is amazing. You know, I remember Patrick White was a young teenager, and I'm 04 during that telethon. Mm-hmm. We met him, and he was in the hospital in the bed, and I just went in to talk to him. Like, we go over the visit, so just chatting.
Right.
And we get talking, and he's a huge fan, great kid. So we become friends, right? We make the contact. And later that year, he's here at a game, and he's texting me, and there's a rain delay. And that was when Nesson was still in the Fenway Park.
Correct.
And so I said, well, it's raining. You bring your buddies in. So he and, like, five of his buddies, and they're just high school kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
I end up bringing them in and on set during the rain delay. And, you know, his buddies are throwing M&Ms at us while we're live on here. You know, they're just being any gang of high school guys. And you know, it's just he and I'll always remember that he was like, you know, they're going to win the World Series. It was 04.
Yeah.
It was July of 04, right? August of 04. And he's like, you know, we're going to talk as soon as they win the World Series. You fast forward, you guys win the World Series, and I'm driving home, and I just get a text from him. You know, just we're all smiling ear to ear.
Yeah.
You know, what amazed me is I don't remember what year he passed away. It was a few years after that. And it was so painful when we got back to this time of year, right? This brings back a lot of tough memories for families because they're all involved in a telethon, and now they see it on TV and it's back. And you know, his father and his sisters were there the year after, and I was like, this really. And they said, you know what? This event, this cause, meant so much to us that as painful as it is, we will do whatever we can do because it's helping other families.
Absolutely, and that's. That's the bottom line of what the Jimmy Fund Telethon, radio telethon is all about, is continually helping other families that are going to go through. This is not going to go away. Hopefully soon it'll go away, but you got to raise money not only for the treatment, but for helping other families along the way. The story that you just told reminds me of, you know, a similar one to mine. It was, you know, my brother-in-law passed away from multiple myeloma not too long ago. And now it hits home for me, right? Like I've been involved with that and gone through, you know, being a team captain, but now, you know, it affects me personally. He wasn't at Dana-Farber, but he was at Mass General, which was another great hospital as well. Yep. But the stories you hear that you just told, and, you know, personal experiences like I'm talking about now, really hit home, and how important raising money for research and helping kids and adults that are battling this terrible, terrible disease is very important. And EEI and Nesson do a fantastic job, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
You know, it is the thing about doing this every year, and I'm sure you felt it as a player a little bit when your brother-in-law, you know, started on that journey, right, when you mm-hmm. first get that news. Whereas maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, if I'd had a lymphoma diagnosis, I'd have been, oh, my God. But now it was like, okay, here's what we have to do. And yeah. and who knows how the journey's going to go.
Right.
But you understand being around this and being around these people and these doctors mm-hmm. that at least there's a playbook. You know what I mean?
Correct.
Whereas you're not, you know, as soon as you tap into those, you're not alone. And, you know, you've got, you know, Bill Belichick talks about doing your job, right? You
right.
know, they've got the Bill Belichick
they do.
Of every type of cancer you can imagine.
They
right?
do.
The greatest in his or her field.
Right.
And the comfort. And you have Mass General, again, I get lumped these together. These are the greatest hospitals in the world.
In the world.
And just the peace of mind you get by knowing that you've got the best in your corner. I mean, that takes away, I think, a big chunk of the fear.
The fear, yeah.
For the family going
in. I totally agree. And if, you know, obviously, if something happens in my family, they're the first ones I'm calling. Like
by the way,
like
don't be,
you,
you're
I
better
would...
off calling your wife first. I've learned this the hard way now. Make it the second call.
I was just going to say, I'm calling Lisa first, then I'll tell my wife later.
Yeah.
But no, it's this hospital is so amazing. From the doctors to the staff to Lisa Sherber with the family services part of it, from the top to the bottom, it's a fantastic hospital, and I'm proud to still be a part of the Jimmy Fund for as long as I've been here, since 1995. I've been either visiting there or visiting. Lisa would bring a patient to Fenway and I'd be working and ask me to come to a suite. I'll do anything for the Jimmy Fund and Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
You're in your 27th year as part of this community, which is incredible. And I know that because I just celebrated my 26th anniversary at Nesson. And I told you, the day I interviewed for the job at Nesson in August of 1995, you were pitching. They gave me tickets to a game, and I got to watch you pitch. I said, wow, this guy's great. I love working here. Little did I know someday I'd work with you. But it is I want to go back to that 95 season because you said you asked to go over there and see
yeah.
the Jimmy Fund. Now, again, at that point, you know, you've had success, but you've also had, you know, the bump, right? I mean, you go from the NLCS, then all of a sudden you're fighting just to keep your spot in this game. You
right.
come here and you catch fire. You're
yeah.
rolling and the team's going, you know, after three straight losing seasons, the team's mm-hmm. on its way back to a first place finish. How did you balance that? And how did these guys, I mean, over these 2 days, we're going to have a team that, frankly, has been struggling big time, losing
yeah.
two out of three games pretty much for the last 3 weeks, fighting for a wild card spot, but they are all able to compartmentalize it and get over there and help the Jimmy Fund. But for you, and I know it's easy to say that's what professionals do, but it's not that easy. You know, you were in 1995, you had a year that kind of reestablished yourself, and to your credit, you built on that and never looked back. But in July of 95, you don't know that yet. You know what I mean? You're still fighting.
Well, yeah, it's
right?
a grind.
It's
yeah.
a grind. I mean, yeah. but you're just at the beginning of the grind. You don't
right.
even have a long history to fall back on. You know,
right.
2005, you struggle a little bit. You go, okay, here's what I've done for the last 10 years.
Right.
I know what I need to do. 95, you know, probably I know you block it out because you're an athlete. You're a professional athlete.
Right.
But still, it's there, right?
It's
that
there.
I got, you know.
Yeah.
How did you, it just amazes me that somebody at that point in their career, it still has the presence of mind, I want to be part of this. I want to help this. Do you remember you sort of balancing that? Or is there a point that, is that a point in the season where now you feel good enough about the way things are going this season that you can start doing that?
No, I just think, you know, this was instilled on me by my parents, is that, yeah, sports was great. And glad and very privileged to have a job in the big leagues and be in Boston, and they gave me an opportunity. And but there's more important things in life than baseball. You know, it was my job, my career, but being able to give back to those that are, you know, suffering from a horrible, horrible disease is more important to me. Yeah, baseball is important, but sure. Giving back, I think, was instilled in me that it's more important. And I always was a believer that not only did I want to support the community I grew up in, but the community I played in. And I've got involved with, obviously, the Make-A-Wish in Pittsburgh and then the Jimmy Fund here. Meeting Mike Andrews, who was the president of the Jimmy Fund back then, and then Larry Lucchino took over after he left. It just truly is an amazing place. How can you say no to go visit the kids there? It's incredible.
It just blows me away though, because knowing your professional journey, you know, it would have been easy to just even if all those things are important to you.
Yeah.
Would have been easy to say, well, I'm kind of dealing with this right now. I got to get my career going. But you always kept that as part of who you are.
You know, and it kept me grounded. You know, you can get a little ahead of yourself as a professional athlete and all the accolades and, you know, the contracts that you sign and all that stuff. But, you know, that's not the most important thing. It's great to have, and I'm honored to have played for as long as I did. But, you know, like I said before, it's more important to give back to those who are in need, and I still believe that today, no matter what.
Yeah, and now, I mean, again, you win the Roberto Clemente Award, which is still amazing to me. That is, you know, outside of winning a Cy Young Award, I'm not sure there's a better award.
I don't think so either. That was, you know, being voted in Cy Young voting that first year there, and being nominated 8 times. I think, you know, everybody, you know, you've done the interviews with me, like, what's the most, you know, winning 2 World Series, but winning the Roberto Clemente Award meant the most to me. That's the thing I'm most proud of, is being able to have that trophy in my office at home. And people always ask their friends that come over, what's that? I'm like, oh, that's the Roberto Clemente Award. And they know about it, even though they're not non-baseball fans. They know what the Roberto Clemente Award is. And being able to accept it from the Clemente family was precious. I know the two boys, Luis and his brother, for a long time since I was in Pittsburgh as a player, but getting to be on the field, it was in San Francisco. I got when the Giants won the World Series that year. It was Game 2 of the World Series.
Right.
Got to get the trophy right at home plate, so it was pretty cool to
that
get the trophy
so cool.
From the family. And and then David Ortiz got it the next year,
right.
Which was pretty cool.
Back to back years.
Yeah.
And a big part of that here was that work with the Jimmy Fund. Now you retire a year later, and you are so involved now, and I've seen honorary chairmen and honorary captains and honorary, you know, I think I call you CEO half the time of the Red Sox Foundation. I know you're not, but the point is you're actually legit. I mean, just so people understand, is that you don't just apply your name to it. Like, you're involved. You know what's going on with the foundation.
Yeah,
Becca does an amazing job.
Becca is amazing.
You know, I'm not trying to suggest that you're running it day to day. That's her world, but you're involved. Like, you know what's going on. You know, and how gratifying is that to now be able to see what started as maybe a commitment you had to a couple specific, you know, charities, right, in the 90s, to now, you know, the money and the aid and the help that the Red Sox Foundation are able to spread around New England is almost more than you can imagine.
And the Jimmy Fund is one of our cornerstone partners, right? It's very important to us at the Red Sox Foundation to be a part of that, as well as home base, as well as RBI, all the cornerstones that are involved, as well as other charities that are asking that we try to give grants to. But, you know, Tom asked me the year I retired in 2012, he wanted me to be the honorary chairman of the Red Sox Foundation, because they formed the foundation in 2007, I think, after maybe it was 05.
It was 05.
When we visited the White House and then went to Walter Reed Hospital.
Right.
Tom and John wanted to create their own foundation for the Red Sox, and it's become the biggest sports foundations in the country right now. And for me to be the honorary chairman of it and get involved, and you know, I was running a golf tournament for Pitching It for Kids for such a long period of time, and I transferred my knowledge of running golf tournaments since 92 to the Red Sox Foundation, and we've been cranking out, which is, you know, obviously because it was supposed to be today, unfortunately, because of Henry, Henry or Hank, as I like to call her, It's now the 27th of August, and it's just I'm proud to continually raise money for the Red Sox Foundation, which in turn goes to the Jimmy Fund or Home Base or anybody else.
Red Sox Scholars. Red Sox Scholars is
another one. Yeah.
The foundation does. It's again the corners of the Dimmick Center, which we went over and volunteered during COVID, which became a really important testing location.
During COVID,
was able to pivot and help out the community in those ways. It really is impressive, and you know, not just saying that because we're here with the Red Sox, but I know that the Red Sox Foundation is kind of the model that a lot of other teams follow now. And the home base program, not to go off on that side, but that's amazing. You talk about grassroots and the specific.
Yes.
You were asking me that we were talking about Kurt Power the other day, right? Our friend who's just an amazing Purple Heart recipient who went through the program at home base. And you see what he's doing now to help others. It is amazing how you guys, and you were the first. I always say this. I remember it was as simple as the very beginning. You talked to General Hammond. It was the very beginning. You did the promo. Mm-hmm. I remember we aired it on Nesson. Nesson shot it. You did a promo that was simply, it's okay, you know, because veterans, the men and women coming back from the middle of it all, are coming back and they don't know how to ask for help.
They don't
ask for help.
Correct.
And for an athlete, and you're on the top of your game at the time, to be able to say, hey, it's okay.
Yeah.
It was as simple as that. Before anything else, before the clinical work, before the hospital work, before the outpatient services, before any of that, the first step was, how do we get these people to ask for help to come in? And your promo was instrumental in breaking down some of those barriers.
And that's what General Hammond and the rest of the team that was forming the home base program wanted to do. Because it's, you know, these guys are on volume 20 out of a 10 scale when they're over there fighting for our freedoms. And they come home and it's on zero. It's quiet. They don't know anybody else. They don't know how to handle situations. They're too proud to ask for help. And they don't know that there might be a veteran that's right next door to them. Or, you know, so it was the home base really did a great job of connecting the dots for everybody. They'll get them in, get them treatment, and realizing you're not the only one that feels this way. There's other guys. Maybe he might be your neighbor and you don't know it. There's other guys, there's other people that feel the same way, so it's okay to ask for help. I remember being at a satellite event down in Naples at a golf tournament. General Hammond was there, and they asked me to speak between the big general that was holding the tournament down there. He was speaking, and then there was a Purple Heart recipient as well as a Medal of Honor recipient, and they're asking me to speak in between. I'm like, why did you sandwich me in between this? But long story short is, after the event was over, there was a guy that came up and introduced himself to me. He said, hey, big fan, didn't know you were going to be here, don't know what this is about. I'm a veteran myself, and I just kind of introduced him to a group of people. I think he was involved with another organization that got an invitation, got to him to come to Naples to go to this dinner, this gathering that night. And he showed up and started talking and told me that he suffered from PTSD and the invisible wounds of war. And so I'm like, you're in the right place. Let me introduce you to this guy. He's went through the same thing. Let me introduce you to this guy. Let me introduce you to General Hammond. This is the program that you need to be a part of. And, just right place, right time for him to come in there. But there was a connection there for sure.
That's incredible. And those are the connections that can change a life.
Yeah.
Really is.
They're saving lives on a daily basis down there at the home base program.
When you pitched, you didn't have Twitter. We didn't have Twitter.
No.
Thankfully.
Thank God.
Sometimes I wish we didn't have
or
it.
Or Instagram.
Now.
Yeah.
Or Instagram or any of the social media. So give me one bit of advice. You are Tim Wakefield right now speaking to the Boston Red Sox minor league organization, okay? All the young players in the organization together, or if we take it out of the Red Sox, all of Major League Baseball, right?
Right.
They've asked you to speak. What advice would you give these young guys today? Because some of it, we didn't have all of that when you were coming up or when any of us were coming up, okay? But there's always been distractions.
Absolutely.
So what would you tell these guys? Not necessarily about social media per se, but about the distractions, because, you know, they might change, they might be different distractions, but there's always a million things that'll pull you away from the task at hand.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, today's player, there's so many more distractions. For me, when I was here, it was just, you know, the beat writers and the media. That was one thing I need to learn coming from Pittsburgh to here, was there's more, way more media in the city of Boston, right? So I began to just, back then you could build relationships with the guys and just, you know, chew the
who
fat.
Who you can trust. Yeah, and who also you trust. Who you can trust and who you can't. That's a big part.
And I think now with social media, a lot of guys are really afraid, and I don't blame them because there's more out there other than the beat writers with social media. But I guess the easiest way to do it, and I see players, and especially Alex Cora now, is you got to be transparent. You can't hide anything. I mean, something that I even tell my kids nowadays, if you mess up, just be transparent and just say, hey, I messed up, and you move on.
Own it.
Yeah, that's a better way. You just got to own it. You know, the greatest advice that I got from one of my mentors was Phil Niekro. Mm-hmm. He said, you got to learn how to accept your losses without being defeated. But you got to acknowledge that you lost.
Right.
Right. You got to own it. And then you got to put it behind you.
Yeah.
You know, if I give talks, I always talk about, you know, there's a reason why they put a rearview mirror is so small, because they don't want you driving backwards. And the windshield's big.
Right.
You know, rearview mirror small.
Yeah. Looking forward.
Yeah. Don't look behind you.
All right. Will you ever, these are the final questions I got to get to.
Okay.
Will you ever compete on the senior tour?
No.
Come on.
Not good enough.
Oh, yes, you are.
Not good enough.
Come
I don't
on.
Care if I'm a zero, which I am right now. Those guys
humble
are
brag.
Like plus.
Humble brag. I don't care if I'm a zero, which I am right now.
Those guys are way too good. I've played with
What's
a bunch
the difference?
Of them.
So tell me that, because you know I'm a hacker. I'm just a whatever.
Yeah.
I'm the average. I'm probably the average golfer, which, you know.
Okay.
Is, means I shoot 90, and I'm, you know, if I break 90, I'm thrilled.
Fair enough.
But that's for most of us, right?
Right.
You're not. You're a legitimate competitive golfer, because you, not only are you a zero, but, you know, you play in Tahoe on TV, and the
right.
cameras don't bother you. I mean,
right.
to me, that's the difference, okay?
Right.
So what is the difference between you? Maybe not the PGA, but the back end of the guys who are competing on the Champions Tour.
They
whatever
do
it's
it.
Called now. I don't even know what it's called.
Champions
now.
Tour.
It is Champions Tour.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
what's the difference between you and them?
They have way more experience than I do. It's almost like me comparing myself as a baseball player to somebody that just picked up baseball and playing in an adult league. Why can't he be as good as I was, right? I did this for a living every single day. It became second nature to me. Golf to those guys is second nature to them. They know how to hit shots. They know, like, yeah, I can hit a golf ball and I can get it in the hole and maybe shoot even par or one under or a couple over. But they're so much better that it's ingrained in it. It's like second nature. It's like me, I can throw a strike every single time, you know,
right.
wherever, inside, outside, I can manipulate the ball that way. Yeah. They can manipulate a golf club and a golf ball and get it into the hole.
All right, so if I convince Stacy into letting you stop everything else in your life, how many days do you need? I want to bankroll your run here. How many?
Happening.
How much? Come on.
It's not happening.
You'll see the kids on the back end.
Yeah,
you'll see
exactly.
them come to your retirement
yeah,
party.
Exactly.
It's funny, though, because, you know, like you or John Smoltz, like the guys who were
really good.
Derek Lowe. Everyone
Tony
thought,
Romo.
Right.
And they try to play pro,
right?
and they don't make the cuts.
Right. And everyone's like, well, they're athletes. They get the mentality. They'll be fine.
It's not
the lifetime of practicing,
yeah.
of hitting a particular shot. I always say that's the thing about a pitcher, right? It's not just that, like you said, you can manipulate the moment, but on a 3-2 pitch,
right.
the bases loaded in this setting and the wind blowing here, they can not only execute the pitch, but put it that
right.
one place where they know that hitter can't hit it.
Exactly. And that's the difference. They've been doing it since they were in college or high school, right? Most of these professional golfers
right.
are, and same way with baseball players, right?
What's your greatest golf moment?
Wow. Hole in one.
Where?
At Black Rock Country Club.
At your place?
Yeah, at my place.
Was it the tournament? Was it during
no,
something?
No, it was just an extra 9 holes that we decided to play after playing 18.
After
it was an emergency 9 because the score was tied between two of us, so we went back out for another 9.
That's all. Is that your only hole in one?
No, that was my third.
Yeah. See again.
Sorry.
Why do I ask?
Humble brag.
No, that's not. That's just a brag. That's not a humble brag. That's just a brag. But I teed you up for that one, so it's legal.
Yeah, you did.
Okay, this was cool. I appreciate the time. We talked baseball
all
the time.
You.
It was kind of fun. Real quickly, I know you. Do you watch Ted Lasso?
No, everybody's telling me to watch
it.
I need to do it. My wife's
you're
all
not,
over me about not watching
quite
it.
Ted Lasso optimism, but you're close. Okay, Ted Lasso. The whole point is the most optimistic guy in the world, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's there's fake optimism and there's real optimism, and I know the difference, I think, and yours isn't fake optimism because you carried your career with optimism.
Yeah.
We talked about that. When you went through a bump in the road, when Pittsburgh told you you were done, you never believed in it. You believed better days ahead, right?
Yeah,
is that fair?
Absolutely fair.
Right.
Yeah.
So I know you generally believe better days are ahead.
Yes.
Okay, why would this team? I know you believe this team is still going to get it back together.
Because they're talented. They're too talented to not win. I mean, and every team goes through this. It's not the talent on the field, because they're talented. It's the chemistry amongst each other that they come together, like the 13 team or the 18 team, you know, under Alex Cora.
Yeah.
Unbelievable team. Won 109 games in the regular season and then win the World Series. It's like us in 04. We weren't the best team on the field, but we gelled at the right time. That's why I always stay optimistic about everything, because all it takes is one little base hit, a duck fart, or whatever, to all of a sudden it clicks. Whether it was the fight that we got in 04 yeah. with Tech and A-Rod that kind of lit a spark under us. And it might take something like that for the Red Sox now, but I'd never doubt this team if they can get to the postseason. I know they can get to the postseason.
You know, that's interesting, because when you look at the probability stuff, all the statistics, they actually get – it's not better, because you're comparing apples and oranges, but if you look at the weight of the probabilities compared to other teams,
right,
it's heavier for them to succeed in the playoffs than it is for them to make the playoffs. It's almost like the experts are saying they're built for the playoffs.
Right.
As long as they can get there.
Correct.
You know, the way Alex Cora moved his starters around, his relievers, everything he did in 2018 kind of works for this team, the
Correct.
Way it's constructed.
I agree.
So if they get there, who knows?
All you got to do is get your foot in the door. Look at us in 04.
No.
We won the wild card. Was that the first year of the wild card?
No.
I think the second
or
third.
No, it was 95, I think.
Well, they had the wild card back then?
Yeah, that was that.
I'm telling you, the older I get, the worse my memory is.
But that's okay. I would tell you, Rick Middleton, when I used to do Bruins,
yeah.
Rick Middleton looked at me on the air once and said, "Don't ask me about the 80s. I don't remember them." You know? There might have been some different issues there. But the point is, like Jim Rice, we have a running gag with Jim Rice. On this date, you hit this home run, you made. He is 0 for lifetime. He doesn't remember a single home run we show him.
Remember mine. Because it was only one.
But if I showed you a strikeout,
no, I have no
if
idea.
I said you struck out this guy, unless it was, maybe you remember a ninth inning, whatever.
Maybe, yeah.
But generally, are you going to remember, like, in the fourth inning, you struck out Giambi? But yeah, you can remember that.
No.
Unless
not
I take
all.
It, and maybe you will.
But not at all.
When you do enough of something, you have a holes in one, pretty soon you won't remember that.
I hope.
Because you're going to have so many of them.
I hope.
This was cool. I appreciate
Thanks.
The visit.
Thanks, DC. Appreciate it.
JimmyFund.org, RedSoxFoundation.org.
Please make a donation.
You can make
it
a donation.
Goes, absolutely.
Any of those places. It's incredible, and we'll get back to baseball next week. And by then, maybe they've won some games, and we can be
I think,
more.
I think can, they'll be in a better
be
position
like
next
Tim
week.
Tim Wakefield and be more optimistic.
I hope so.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks.
This has been the TC and Company podcast. This is what professional podcasters do. They say goodbye at the end. And so for Tim Wakefield and Officer Nesson, thanks for checking it out. We'll see you next week.